We'd like to thank our friends at PwC for their support, partnership, and collaboration in making Retail Gets Real. Learn more about how PwC helps retailers at pwc.com.
I think what COVID did, because it absolutely, you know, created a standstill in footfall, I mean, literally no footfall for all of those lockdown periods, it drove home the urgency of the need for those transformative kind of new approaches.
Welcome to Retail Gets Real, where we hear from retail's most fascinating leaders about the industry that impacts everyone, everywhere, every day. I'm Bill Thorne, and on this episode of Retail Gets Real, we're talking about retail trends to watch with Kate Anquetil, CEO and founder of GDR Creative Intelligence. Kate Anquetil, welcome back to Retail Gets Real.
Thank you, Bill. I'm delighted to be here. Thanks for having me.
Now, you were just in New York at the big show. Good experience?
Fantastic experience. Yep. Got back. Didn't get COVID. Sick. That's the main thing.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that. Very important.
It felt very safe, actually. You know, you knew once you were in with the green wristband that everyone else that was in was vaccinated and, you know, it felt very well organized on the COVID front. So yes, congrats on that front. And yeah, fascinating as ever, fascinating innovation going on. Yeah. I saw some very good speakers. You know, it's obviously not, you know, perhaps the extent of the footfall that would be in a normal year. I think that was to be expected, but certainly I was inspired as usual, as ever with the NRF. It's you know, all retail life is there. And the question is just, you know, you can't get around it all in the number of days that you're present.
Yeah. You know, it's really interesting to me because I remember when I first started, which has been a while back, but I remember everybody was talking about the big show, big show, big show. And it's like, look, I've been to a lot of shows. This is nothing different about this show from any other show. And yet once I got to the big show, I realized it was different. The level of enthusiasm, the level of energy. I mean, you know, at the NRF, we work very, very hard to make sure that it runs without fault. And of course, there's always things that happen and you work hard. And yet at the end of the day, you get sustained just by the energy that is there, the things that you learn, the people that you meet, and the opportunity for people to convene and come back together. And the only time that they get to see each other almost on a yearly basis is at the big show. So it was wonderful to be able to do it again.
Yeah, absolutely.
So speaking of the big show, and speaking of speaking, you spoke. And you talked about retail trends to watch. And we want to talk to you about those. But first, set the scene for us. We're entering another year of pandemic, and the retail industry faces a lot of challenges. But we've seen consumers be incredibly resilient during this time. Where are we now? And how would you describe the state of retail right now?
Well, Bill, I do come to this from obviously a British person's perspective, although
you're British?
I am British, funnily enough. I don't think you spotted that. That's something about me gave that away.
I'm shocked. I had no idea.
But of course, our research perspective is entirely global. But I have to remember when I came and spoke at the NRF Big Show in 2019 in the UK was the worst year that retail had ever on record. That was before COVID. And that was before that kind of, you know, kind of negative mindset had really hit the US, I think, because everyone at the NRF was still very positive at that time. And I was coming from a background where, you know, retail UK was in a desperate state. So I have that as my kind of backdrop, i.e. things were bad before COVID. But I actually think that what has happened extraordinarily is that the 2 years that we've been through with COVID have actually led to a true kind of renewal, a rebirth, you know, deleveraging of physical retail and the reduction in footfall across the board, pretty much. But a lack of direction before. You know, everyone knew that they had to improve their kind of digital integration and be, you know, truly omnichannel, but it wasn't really happening at the speed that it needed to in order to offset the... And actually, I think as a result of what we've been through, because anyone who's still standing has absolutely revolutionized their operations to a point where literally no footfall for all of those lockdown periods.
To this,
it drove home the urgency of the need for those transformative kind of new approaches. You know, having to deal with over the next few years, in particular, this sort of massive demographic wave that's coming, you know, in 2030, where half the world's population will be the young'uns, the Gen Z and the Alphas. So I think if we hadn't had this awful, terrible pandemic, which of course has been, you know, in every respect, a human disaster and nightmare, funnily enough, I think for the retail business, it's jolted us into the future.
Yeah. So we could talk hours about that. I want to find out from you, what are the top three or four trends you see in the retail industry that are making a really big impact right now?
Well, if I recall back to my keynote, which was for us really the kind of summary of the year of what we think is most important going forward, there were three things, three chapters in that presentation, which I do think still hold. And we're only a month afterwards now, so it's still...
I know we changed the speed of light, but that would be really fast.
Oh, no, I was totally wrong last month. I completely changed my ideas this month.
It's the nature of the beast.
So the three things I would still stick to are the fulfillment revolution, which we've just talked about, really, the physical store becoming not just about, you know, exploration and experience, which of course it always has been and always will be, particularly flagships and so on. But the regular, you know, high street, main street stores, I think will be much more also about fulfillment and click and collect and automated fulfillment. So I think one of the case studies that did cause quite a lot of eyebrows to rise in a good way in the audience were the kind of robotic click and collect systems that I showed, like, for example, Delipop, which was by Retail Robotics, who have just opened their first fully automated click and collect space in Paris, which was originally for Carrefour, the hypermarket, but is soon to be multi-brand. So they've got all the top supermarkets in France signing up so that they no longer have to, you know, suffer the margin erosion and, in fact, you know, loss-making situation where if you deliver groceries to an individual person's home in a truck, then you are probably experiencing a 22 euro cost per household when you're only probably charging that household maybe 3 or 5 euros. So that's fully loss-making and unsustainable. And a you know, it's a disaster for the environment, all those trucks going to everybody's houses. And what this Delipop kind of automated click and collect solution does is allow, you know, hundreds of people to walk to their local high street, you know, in the 15-minute walkable city, which is a big thing in Paris, to pick up their chilled and frozen, you know, groceries from all the top grocers, with the massive advantage for the consumer that they're buying potentially at hypermarket prices, but picking up in central Paris where there are no hypermarkets. So that is a phenomenal advancement, I think, both for the consumer and for the environment and for the retailer, for whom it is much more profitable and much more sensible. And I think the other thing I showed that was a concept, not out yet, but due out this year, is the Urbex Market, which is basically a multi-story building in going to what it's going to be. It doesn't exist yet, but rolling out this year, which will be, you know, like a sort of 20-story high building, which is essentially an enormous vending machine. Again, for that last mile solution for built-up areas, which again is a solution to the environmental degradation that comes with having all these trucks delivering to people's homes. So I do think that the nature of the high street or the main street is changing, and some of what we will end up with will be, you know, robotic and automated and potentially unstaffed or combo. So Urbex Market envisages itself having, you know, a cafe on the ground floor or fresh food that you pick yourself or a restaurant on the top floor. So that it is actually potentially also experiential retail with employment and hangout spaces and possibly becoming a community hub. You know, all the things we love about physical retail, but where you could also show up and get, you know, 50 items in 135 seconds through automated click and collect. So I think that's one area that's really interesting, the automation and the fulfillment revolution. You've asked me what are three. So the other one, number two, I would say is alt commerce or alternative commerce, social commerce, you could say. And I thought we were very taken by that figure that 31% of Gen Z already say that they prefer to shop online via non-traditional methods rather than through boring websites. So, you know, that's, I think, a little bit of a jolt to us oldies, isn't it? But that's the way the young...
There are other methods? I didn't realize that there were other methods. What have they discovered that I don't know?
Well, so for them, it's all about, you know, shopping through social media, you know, directly within the app, you know, shopping through TikTok. So the Chinese version of TikTok is selling $26 billion worth of revenue last year directly through the stream. That's Iceland's GDP. And, you know, TikTok is rolling that out worldwide. The idea of, you know, buying through the live stream, buying through your peers' recommendation, all of those kind of community-based, peer-based means of selling, basically, which where you would have to say that the e-commerce bit, the pure commerce, is only a subset of the social kind of endeavor that's going on. And it also includes, you know, obviously the rise of things like rental, swapping, digital twinning, where you're put together with other people that you're likely to have some kind of community with. And in fact, it's the community that comes first and the, you know, renting, swapping, selling, buying comes second. That's basically what Gen Z and Alpha seem to prefer.
So it's community first, buying second.
First, buying second, absolutely.
It's very interesting.
And the third thing, of course, I'm sure you're expecting me to say this, is the whole metaverse revolution, which, you know, I'm sure you've got a view on that. Tell me, what did you think?
No. Please proceed.
Well, it was, you know, it was mentioned a lot, wasn't it? For the first time in my experience, I don't remember the metaverse being a big thing at previous NRFs.
It's new. I mean, that was not a big thing. I think that in the periphery, you may have heard about it, but it was so, you know, theoretical or hypothetical that you really just didn't pay it. Now it's real. I mean, it's very real.
Yeah. Now it's everywhere, isn't it?
Yep.
And, you know, I felt that we are in the sort of peak of the hype cycle. So there's a lot of gushing about the metaverse in a sort of breathless way of how, you know, incredibly important and exciting it is and how everyone's got to get into it and every brand is experimenting and we should all be spending money and we should all be learning, we should all be in there. And I think even, you know, within the last month, we've started to see the inevitable beginnings of the, you know, falling off of the top of that hype cycle pedestal, where there's a little bit more nuance, you know, the discussion of the, you know, the dangers involved with people having NFTs stolen or being, you know, people being perhaps taken by fraudsters and not being quite sophisticated enough to know when that's happening and how to avoid it. And of course, you know, the idea that metaverse, the multiple metaverses, I don't think we ever say it with a plural, no. They are places where, you know, like the early internet and like the current internet, all human activity happens, including all the nasty stuff.
Right.
However, having said all that, I do think that whilst we are as yet, nobody knows whether this will become the third retail channel. I think it's far too early to tell. But I do think that it does show promise to be very exciting for providing engagement tools for that sort of Gen Z and Alpha that's coming up. And that if you are a brand that wants to plan for that sort of 8 to 10 year future when, you know, those young demographics are half the world's population and you expect to be selling to them, you probably do need to be at least familiar enough with the metaverse to know that if you're not there, you're not there for thoughtful reasons and not right. just because you kind of forgot or your CEO yep. didn't get it. You know, and most brands are now in it in some form.
Yeah.
I think that the reason is the NFT revolution. You know, you can now hold digital assets and you can now accrue value in those digital assets. And I think, you know, it is fascinating. It's now a way to raise capital. You know, it's a sort of new form of Indiegogo. Flyfish, the prospective restaurant club that's due to open in New York in 2023, is making NFTs available for future members. It's already, you know, kind of maxed out the number of NFTs that it wanted to sell so far. And you won't be able to go to that restaurant once it opens unless you were a purchaser of the NFT. Which will be about $8,000 or $12,000. But what's interesting about that, you can say, well, what's the difference between that and Soho House? You have to buy a membership for Soho right. House. Well, you know, what's interesting and different is for Flyfish, you could rent out your membership for someone else in the months that you know you're not going to use it. You could sell your membership by selling your NFT if you're fed up with it. And if it does well, then you could sell it for more than you bought it. Okay. Don't get your Soho House membership back, do you, when you join for the first year?
No.
So I do think it is a phenomenally interesting area for retail, but I do feel that nobody knows yet whether it will fundamentally change everything. But I think it's possible that it might.
It's hard. I mean, I'm having a real hard time getting my head around the whole NFT phenomenon and how that is ultimately going to work. Now, that being said, 20 years ago, I probably had a hard time getting my head around how, you know, you'd be selling goods, services, groceries being delivered to your home on the internet. It just didn't make really a whole lot of sense. That's where you got information. That's not where you bought stuff per se, maybe books at Amazon. But anyway, bottom line is it is incredibly intriguing. You know, the retailers have to stay in front of it. And if they poo-poo it or they think, we'll just see how it goes, they're going to be behind. And then they're going to spend a hell of a lot of money trying to catch up to everybody else. So they've got to stay with it. And to your point, it is a generational thing. And, you know, they need to make sure that they're tapping into that generation, what their needs and desires are. They always do. Well, I would like to know what really excites you the most about the future of retail. I mean, we've talked about where we are kind of today, where the vision is a little bit for tomorrow, but what, when you get the opportunity to say, this is my passion, this is what I believe, this is what I'm excited about, what is that?
Well, it has to be circularity, the circular models that are coming out, because I think we have a fundamental problem in retail, which is that the model itself is not planet friendly, I'm afraid. And that therefore is a broken model. And so we have to fix that because the planet's got to come first, hasn't it? So circularity, sustainability, resale, rental, swapping, vintage, making, all of those things, you know, including reduction. I mean, actually reassessing our overconsumption, addressing the issue that endless growth is not actually sustainable. And for corporates to start to recognize that and build that, which is so revolutionary that it's probably going to make me sound as though I'm, you know, politically unacceptable.
It's not true.
And I'm not, obviously, done. I'm truly a commercial person and I recognize, you know, we all have to, you know, look at the bottom line. But we do also have to look after the planet. Yep. And so I love things like the Swedish credit card, Duconomy, where you actually sign up yourself to a credit card that cuts you off if you've gone over your carbon limit on a daily, weekly, or monthly basis. I mean, only the Swedes so far. There's got to come a time, hasn't there, when even the Americans might consider. Give it a few years. But, you know, things like that, Loop, you know, Ascot, the men's fashion brand where you get your impact receipt when you buy your T-shirt, which tells you you should be wearing this item 270 times before you throw it away.
Wow. I thought you were going to say before you wash it. I was going to be like, that would be really weird.
You know, that and how much water and energy and so on was used in its production. And things like sheep ink, you know, they make jumpers, woolly sweaters from New Zealand. And it's meant to be one jumper that you keep for the rest of your life. And it comes with a comb. So you comb the woolly bits off it.
Wow. That's interesting. Well, I, you know, the sustainability and you're right. I mean, it is, I've watched that wave and I think it's really intriguing to me that over the, and I'm going to go for the 20 years where it started to really gain some traction that retail and retailers have an obligation to not only just the communities that they serve, but to the planet and looking for ways to ensure that what they're doing does no harm. And actually enhances how we move forward. And some thought it was a fad. I think it's now a part of doing business. And if you're not doing business that way, you're not going to be doing business much longer. So it is incredibly important. Kate, last question, I promise. What is the best piece of advice you've ever received that's really helped you throughout your career?
I don't hoover up other people's advice. I've always found my own furrow. So it's really just what I've kind of come up with myself.
Well, that's
just
good.
Show up. Hmm. You know, just show up every day, no matter how you feel. And, you know, project positivity, regardless of whether you actually know there's disaster impending. So I think it's a doggedness thing.
Yep.
The people that seem to sort of have longevity do seem to be pretty dogged. And so I think if I were trying to sort of help others, I would just say, you know, not every day is good and that's okay.
Yep.
Some days, some months, and even some years might not be great. And right. It's just about sticking with it, isn't it?
Amen. And that's an amen. I mean, it's exactly right. Show up. Kate Anquetil, thank you so very much for joining us today. Now, let me ask you this, and this is not a tough question. If someone wants to learn more about what you're doing at GDR Creative Intelligence, where do they go?
Oh, that's easy. GDRUK.com.
That is easy. See, I told you, we'd end with the easy one. Kate Anquetil, thank you for joining us on Retail Gets Real. We really enjoyed it. It's been incredibly interesting.
Oh, thank you so much, Bill. It's been a pleasure.
And thank you all for listening to another episode of Retail Gets Real. You can find more information about this episode at retailgetsreal.com. And we'd love to hear from you. So please send feedback and comments to podcast@nrf.com. In this time of pandemic, we'll close once more by asking you to please be safe, stay well. Look forward to being with you next time. Until then, take care.